The Lucas County Council Podcast is a co-production of WGTE Public Media and the Lucas County Council Program, with generous support from an Ohio Attorney General's Office grant award. More information at causakids.net.
Welcome to The Power of One, the Lucas County CASA podcast, where we explore how just one caring adult can make a life-changing difference for a child in the welfare system. I'm your host, Andrea de la Roca. Today, I'm joined by my colleague and our dedicated CASA staff attorney, Mary Meadows. Mary plays a critical role in making sure children's voices are heard and that their best interests are represented in court. She also works closely with our CASA volunteers who step in to advocate for children experiencing abuse and neglect. We'll be talking not only about Mary's role, but also about the powerful impact CASA volunteers have in children's lives, an impact that was confirmed in the Ohio CASA Evaluation Report. The statewide study was conducted in 2023 and found that children with a CASA volunteer are almost four times more likely to be reunified with their families, 10 times more likely to find a permanent placement, and far less likely to re-enter foster care after leaving. The study also showed that CASA volunteers help children get more timely health care and give them a strong voice in the system. In this episode, we'll explore what those findings mean here in Lucas County, how Mary partners with volunteers to support children, and why the work of one CASA volunteer can make all the difference. Mary, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Mary, can you share with our listeners what it means to serve as a CASA staff attorney?
Yes, my job involves working with the CASAs to help them with any legal issues that may come up and support them as they navigate their role with the agency, with the courts, and those kinds of things. And so it's a little different than the CASA themselves. I'm not out there visiting the children. I don't know necessarily what's going on in the case unless the CASA themselves tells me about it, but they can call me at any point in time if they have a question about their case. I go to court with them when anytime there are legal issues involved, and stay with them and work with the coaches to make sure the CASAs have the support they need.
Okay, so CASAs have your support, your legal support, and they also have the CASA coaches, right? Who else do they have in their team?
Okay, so in addition to the CASA coaches, there is the legal staff itself. There is the administrative staff that makes sure everything goes smoothly, that what needs to get filed gets filed. They have staff who's helping them make requests when needed, and a staff member who helps file motions. And of course, there's also the director of the program who also fills in as a staff attorney when necessary.
What drew you to this work and what keeps you passionate about it?
I was drawn to the work because I have always felt like an advocate to children. I came from an abusive household in a time where those kinds of things weren't always reported, and there certainly weren't any CASA volunteers. But I do remember that in first grade, I had a teacher who really believed in me, who nicknamed me Joy, and made me feel like I was worth something. And so that experience, that involvement with just one person, helped shape my life so that I could become an attorney, become an advocate for children.
Many people hear guardian ad litem or CASA, but don't know the difference. How do you explain the unique role to families or community members?
CASAs are volunteers who go through training to learn how to be a guardian ad litem, essentially. At the end of their pre-service training, they're sworn in by the court to serve as guardian ad litem, and then the court appoints them to a specific case. The guardian ad litem's job is to look out for the best interest of the child, We don't work for the agency. The volunteers do their own separate investigation. They don't rely simply on what the agency has been telling them. They often have more time with the child and so can give a unique perspective to the court. So we are an arm of the court so that we can help the magistrate or judge assess what's in the best interest of a child.
Hi, I'm Maureen Knight, and I'm a CASA volunteer with the Lucas County Juvenile Court. I have worked in pediatrics with children for most of my professional career, and after I retired, I just couldn't say goodbye, so I had to do something that was meaningful. And we had an in-service for the school nurses years ago, and my interest was piqued then, and I just followed up with it after I retired. A court-appointed special advocate. That means that I am responsible for advocating for the children who have had traumatic situations and are involved with the Lucas County Children's Services. And I'm the person that investigates all that and then makes recommendations for their care and what they need.
Now, let's talk about the impact CASA volunteers are truly having in children's lives. And we have brand new data to back it up. For the first time in Ohio, a comprehensive study has measured how children fare when a CASA volunteer is appointed to their case. The study was led by the Ohio College of Medicine Government Resource Center at The Ohio State University in partnership with the Ohio Department of Job and Family Services and the Ohio Department of Medicaid. Researchers examined thousands of case records comparing children with CASA volunteers to those without across rural, urban, and suburban counties. The results are powerful. The evaluation found that in counties like Lucas, children with CASA volunteers were almost four times more likely to be reunified with their families and 10 times more likely to find a permanent placement. From your legal perspective, what do you think CASA volunteers make such a difference?
I think they make a difference because of their involvement with the case. Their strongest connection is with the child, but in order to support the child's best interest, it's necessary to find out what the family itself needs, what the parents need. And so the CASA can help bridge the gap, as it were, should the agency not be able to determine what the parents need. Typically, the agency does know what the parents need, but sometimes there's a specialized need that comes up, or the CASA just sees a way that the parents could be supported as they journey towards that permanency of reunification. So the CASAs can help make the home a safer place by helping the parents as well when it's possible to do so.
Okay, can you give us more like specific examples?
So in terms of specific examples, I think it's harder to show examples with reunification because those cases sort of journey on their own. The goal is reunification. The CASA helps ensure, along with the agency, that the parents get the support they need. In terms of other cases where maybe reunification ends up not being possible, the CASA is able to help with the children finding permanency, whether that's with the caregiver that's in place, helping to identify other people, other relatives, and bringing those to the agency to make sure they've been looked at and investigated. Sometimes the CASA themselves are the ones who hear about a relative that has never come up before who may be willing to take the children. That's obviously the second best outcome for parents because they still have visitation rights and other rights related to the children when a relative takes legal custody. When the agency has to take permanent custody, the CASA has been journeying all along the way. They know the child, they've seen their records, and it's because of what they know about the case that they can really help the court understand who the child is. Before I came on as a staff attorney, I had a case where the children had been living in a car. The mother was using drugs, and the children ended up being placed in a foster home where they have now been for over a year. And so part of my job continues to help make sure that caregiver who is interested in adoption can do so. But along the way, I was helping support the mother by supporting her children. And that's what she appreciated all along the way, to help cheer her on as someone who might have been able to reunify with her children. But unfortunately, the disease of addiction didn't allow her to do so. Even so, that caregiver has also been a support to her. So even though the case will likely end in adoption, the caregiver has every intention to keep in relationship with that parent. And so sometimes it's supporting the conversation between the two. Not every foster family is able or willing to keep that connection. But in this case, we really thought mother would make it and became her cheerleaders as well, because that was what at the time was in the best interest of the children. Unfortunately, that changed. But as a guardian, my job was to help the mother get better as well, or help encourage the mother to get well so that the home could be safe for the children.
Okay, so when you were talking about outcomes, you talked about reunification, custody to a family member, adoption. But what about if let's say it's a teenager and they don't want to be adopted? What do they have any other option?
So yes, the teenagers have the option of a permanent placement living arrangement, a PPLA. We referred those to. Okay. So in that case, they may remain in a foster home, but they are moving towards emancipation when they're of age and finished with their secondary school. So some teens are old enough, they don't feel like trying to reengage in a foster home, or rather move from a foster home that they're happy in. Because they've been through the system. They may have been in the system a long time. They may have been in and out of the system. And so for those children who make that choice, and if the CASA or the guardian feels it's in the best interest of that child, can help facilitate that permanency planning towards that planned permanent living arrangement.
Okay. How old do the children have to be to have that choice? Do you know?
I believe it's 14. Okay. I could be wrong on that.
Okay.
But and a lot of youth are successful in that type of arrangement. And there are services beyond emancipation through our Bridges program, or not our Bridges program, but the agency's Bridges program, that helps the youth transition into young adulthood. Because we all know our adult children need that help. And sometimes the foster family is still engaged with the child. But there are a lot of success stories with youth who take that route.
The evaluation also showed that children with CASA volunteers were less likely to re-enter foster care after leaving. How do you see volunteers contributing to that long-term stability?
I think a lot of times without a CASA is that children maybe are reunified prematurely with the parents, that the parents don't have the stability, the long-term stability they need to keep and maintain a safe environment for the children. So I think the CASA helps slow down the agency, sometimes when appropriate, with reunification. Not because they're ultimately against the reunification, but because they want to make sure the parents have the stability they need. We had a case recently where the agency was moving to legal custody to a parent, sort of the non-offending parent, we might call him. And our CASA was concerned because that parent hadn't even had an overnight visitation with a child, and he had not been the primary caregiver before the child came into the system. And so we were able to help the CASA or the guardian advocate for slowing down, to say, hey, we can do a review in a couple months. Let's give Dad a couple months of overnight visits and then progressing to extended visits so we can identify and make sure he has the support he needs.
Yeah, and this is just because that's for the best interest of the child.
Exactly.
We want a stability.
Exactly. Stability, yes, is probably one of the primary needs most children in the system need, because obviously removing a child from a family causes instability.
The evaluation also showed that in metropolitan counties, CASA volunteers help children get more well child visits and fewer preventable ER visits. As an attorney, how do you see the importance of those health outcomes when advocating in court?
Again, I think this comes from the guardian's relationship with the child, with understanding the needs that perhaps haven't been met. We had a case, for example, where the mother retained legal custody but was in a treatment program. The child was placed with a grandparent, but the grandparent had no legal right to obtain medical care for the child. And so the CASA was able to help facilitate mother signing that release that would allow grandmother to get the child what he needed. Other times, I've come across cases where there's problems getting the birth certificate so the child can get put on Medicaid. And so the CASA can help make sure that doesn't fall between the cracks so the child can get the medical care they need. And sometimes we have problems with a caregiver getting the child to well child visits and the like. And again, that's something we can bring to the agency because the agency has means to support that. They can provide transportation. But sometimes the caregiver is not as frank with the agency as they might be with a CASA, where they may feel more support, or they just simply don't know what the agency has that could help them get the child the medical care that they need.
And the CASA volunteers can do that because they're the guardian of the child. So legally they can, like when you say like requesting care for the child, like in the case of the grandparent?
No, the guardian can't sign because we are not the custodian of the child. So if the mother is the custodian, but the child is temporarily placed elsewhere, then that's the custodian who has to sign. It has to be the mother who authorizes it. Mother was in an inpatient program, and the CASA had difficulty reaching her, was able to talk to the caseworker to get the caseworker in there with a release so that grandmother could take the child.
Okay.
So the guardian is never the person who can authorize things, but we participate in things or encourage caregivers to ask the agency for what they need, or the guardian lets the caseworker know where there's a gap. And so perhaps it's transportation and the agency needs to pick up the child to take them. Because in cases where the agency has custody, it is really their responsibility to get the child where he or she needs to go. Oftentimes the caregiver can do that for the agency, but sometimes they can't. And so sometimes the guardian knows about services the agency has that the caregiver might not know about.
Okay, and why do you think sometimes the agency miss those gaps?
I'm not sure they miss them. I mean, I think maybe the CASA sometimes finds out about them earlier or preemptively. Sometimes perhaps the caregiver is not as comfortable with the caseworker as they are with the CASA. Sometimes, especially if it's a relative, they may not know they're eligible for that, so they don't even bring it up. Sometimes it takes a while to be able to request records. I mean, it takes a while to request and receive records, so there could be a three-month gap and them not know that the child hasn't been there. And that would be true for the guardian, too, if it weren't that the caregiver was talking to them. And the other issue is that the agency is really understaffed. They need more caseworkers. So as a result, the caseworkers have larger loads, and it may take a little time for them to get that information filtered into the system so that they can make a referral or for transportation or make a referral for whatever's needed. It's not that the caseworker is shirking their responsibility. Yeah. It's simply they're overloaded. And so the CASA helps fill that gap. Really, the CASA works with the agency to make sure the child's best interests are being met. And so it's a partnership in a way. We do our own separate investigation, but we don't do it apart from the agency. We're not trying to be against the agency. We want to help support the agency get what the child needs.
I'm Scott Raymond. I am a CASA volunteer. So once we are assigned a case, it's our job to visit, check in with the children assigned to us regularly. We meet everybody involved in their lives, their parents, guardians if they're different, their teachers, their, you know, other family members, anybody that makes up that child's life, so we can get a complete picture of the kids. And so that we can then represent them in court and tell all the grown-ups what we feel is in their best interest. So once a week, I pick up my grandson and from school and take him home. And we always drive past a house where I know the family. We're one of my CASA families that I worked with, the very first ones. And I see the oldest of the three boys I worked with coming home from school, and Grandma on the front porch welcoming him home and putting her arm around him, and they go inside. And that's really what it's all about. When I met this boy, he was 8 years old. He didn't go to school, and he did not have such a stable home. And here he is, just this typical snapshot of everyday life for most families is pretty extraordinary for him. So that's what makes it all worthwhile.
As we wrap up the findings from the Ohio CASA evaluation, it is important to think about what comes next. The data clearly show that CASA volunteers help children spend less time in foster care, achieve permanency more often, and even see better health outcomes. What advice would you give to someone listening today who is thinking about becoming a CASA volunteer but isn't sure if they are qualified?
The easiest way to find out if you're qualified is to apply. Someone once, I remember in middle school, a friend said, you're gonna audition for this choir? And because she was scared to do so. And she asked, aren't you afraid you won't get in? And I was confused. I looked at her and said, well, if I don't audition, I definitely won't get in. And so I think for a CASA, there are information sessions we have on a regular basis. And you can look at our website to find out when those are. There are people you can talk to, both the staff person, the coaches, I mean, any staff person, or specifically the coaches, to find out what's involved. You can take the pre-service training, and that will help you determine or discern whether this is the right place for you. Again, it's really about befriending and supporting one child or a family that includes more than one child. Most CASAs only take one case at a time. They see it out. Typically, the length of the case is anywhere between 6 months and 2 years, but they are there hopefully throughout that case as a person that the child feels comfortable with, so that they can continue to support the child. Because it's not trying to solve all the children's problems. It's about trying to connect with one child or one family to help them navigate to the point they can reunify, to the point that it's clear reunification can't happen, or whatever the outcome is. But it's really about one child and making that relationship matter, because we really can only do it one child or one family at a time.
Mm-hmm. What gives you the most hope about the future of CASA work in Lucas County?
I think the most hope comes from those stories where the CASAs have really stepped in and made a difference. Sometimes they hear about things sooner than the agency does. For example, we had a case where a youth was able to speak with the caseworker and the CASA about some problems that were happening in a relative home. And it was the CASA who really advocated to make sure that placement was changed for the youth so that they were in a safe environment. So those kind of stories where the CASA can help bring the information to the agency when the agency has not had a chance to visit. And oftentimes it's the CASA the child feels more comfortable with. And so sometimes that helps them disclose things to the agency itself. And I think the other factor is that we do have people volunteering or signing up for our next class. And we always need more CASAs. And so just that there are people who are interested and willing to put in that time to become a guardian gives hope.
Yes. Well, Mary, thank you so much for sharing your insights and for the incredible work that you do every day to protect and advocate for children in Lucas County. And to our listeners, you just heard how powerful it can be when one caring adult steps into a child's life. The Ohio CASA evaluation shows that children with a CASA volunteer are more likely to reunite with their families, find permanent homes, and get the help care they need. But behind every statistic is a child who needs someone to stand by their side. That someone could be you. If you ever thought about making a difference, becoming a CASA volunteer is one of the most meaningful ways to do it. Our training will prepare you for everything you need to know, and our team will support you every step of the way. To learn more, visit CASAKids.net. Again, that's CASAKids.net, or call us at 419-213-6753, 419-213-6753. Thank you for listening to the Lucas County CASA podcast, The Power of One.
The Lucas County CASA podcast highlights how the power of one person can transform the lives of abused children in our community. This podcast is a co-production of WGTE Public Media and the Lucas County CASA program, with generous support from an Ohio Attorney General's Office grant award. All episodes are posted on WGTE.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Learn more about the Lucas County CASA program at CASAKids.net.